up to the Gemara on Daf Lamed Vav Amid Aleph about Einonis and etc. So, since I need a volunteer, now I think Benny is itching to read. So, Einonis. Come on, you got to indulge me. This is my only time I get like Yehuda Rothner, so. Amen.
Eilonis ein la knas klo pitu. We remain here. Hachai reshes vashote va eilonis yesh lehen knas, yesh lehen tainas kisura.
Okay, so the stira here is pretty clear. Right? So Eilonis has no knas, and she's not entitled to the knas, which we'll assume, like as we said until now, is the knas of ones. She's not entitled to the knas of pitui. And the Braisa says that a chereshes, a shota, and an ailunis have knas and have tainus basulim. So the stira is apparent. I don't have to explain the stira. Just I need to explain a couple of the terms here. What is a chereshes and what is a shota? Chaim?
A chereshet is a deaf view, seem to be dumb, like literally dumb, as opposed to. Like deaf, dumb, and mute. The problem is not just they, because they couldn't communicate, they seemed to have no intelligence. And then the.
In contemporary terms, a cheresh chereshes would be someone who's developmentally disabled. Someone who is not what we would term crazy, insane, but not, you know, functional, not fully functional in the sense, you know, you're talking about low functioning of some variety. That would be the definition of a cheresh or chereshes. A shota is someone who could be, on some level, extremely intelligent, highly functioning at times. However, at other times, or even sometimes, all the time, living with delusions. The way Rav Shecht always likes to say, you know, he could be a super genius, but he walks around and thinks he's Napoleon. That's the definition of shota. So, you know, you walk sometimes in Jerusalem, and I never ever personally have this, but you encounter these people who think that they're Jesus or David. They call it Jerusalem syndrome.
I met a Kohen Gadol.
You met a Kohen Gadol? Okay.
Tassel-looking.
And it wasn't just a tourist trap guy, huh? He really believed it. So that person is. There are forms of mental illness that, you know, sort of resemble that. You call something like schizophrenia, and things like that. That would constitute a shota. Something like depression does not constitute shtus. But some person who is not in touch at all with reality, so that constitutes in a clinical sense. A lot of people not in touch with reality, but that's not always doesn't always rise to the level of being clinical. So that's what's called the shota or shota. Yeah.
That would sound more like in the category of development.
No, actually, I think I don't think that's necessarily the case. In other words, it's ma'abed kol mashinos dema. Right, the shota, the chereish, the chereshes, they do not always appreciate the value of everything they're given, but they do appreciate the value of things. They're not acting in a crazy fashion; they don't fully understand. Whereas the shota, you know, it was mekareach suso. Right, if you want to know the technical definition, which is not usually a helpful one in our context, is the discussion of what is a shota is discussed in Chagiga in the first parak. Right, where the Mishnah says that the peturas from reiya. So the Mishnah, the Gemara describes what's the definition of shota. So the Gemara. Is that the first one? So the Gemara that's a machlokas amoran, thank you, whether or not it's koleilu or achas mi koleilu. But the bottom line, these are sort of behaviors of again, we would call it you know insanity of one variety or another. That's not a term we would use to describe someone as developmentally disabled.
Autism was considered early onset schizophrenia.
Right, so autism, to the extent, if it really pushed a person to the category, it would be, hard to say.
It's not considered that anymore.
Right, I'm just thinking, how would you classify someone who is, again, you have people who function pretty well, and you want certainly not disqualify them at all. They're in either category. Someone... Rain Man. Take that as the right. You guys know Rain Man. So how would you classify that? That would probably. It's a hard no. Is that a chereish?
Borderline chereish, borderline not.
I'm not sure. See, I think no. It's I'm not sure in that. See, I'll tell you, that part of the other, Minat Torah, there's no real difference between a Chayrish and a Shota. It doesn't really make a difference. But I'll tell you why it matters. It matters for a Takana de Rabbanon, whether or not there was Kiddushin. Chachamim instituted Kiddushin for Chayrish, they instituted Kiddushin for Shota Metzger, and that's in Daf Yomi, on Daf Kuf Yud, Beis Amud Beis, the bottom, the beginning of the 14th parak of Yevamos, I believe, where the Gemara says that the Chayrish and Chareshis, they're Mesakein Kiddushin, because they can have Kiddushin. In other words, they don't, they can function. Whereas when it comes to a Shota, the Gemara says, Ein Adam Dor B'Nachash B'Kfifayim Nachash. Right, you can't live in a basket with a snake, meaning someone whose behavior is erratic and unpredictable. It's not someone that the Chum did not see that as anything that represents what the institution of marriage is supposed to be. And therefore, they never made any takana. There's no kiddushin derabanan by shota, whereas there is kiddushin derabanan by chayrish and chayreshes. So the question is, if you take someone like the Dustin Hoffman example in Rain Man, so that's probably more in the category of shota, at least in regards to this particular din. Right, you couldn't function someone whose behavior is so
interesting. The whole point was that he wasn't erratic. When he took him out of his
Tom Cruise got along with him in the end.
Okay, yeah. I don't know. So bottom line is,
along with Tom Cruise. You get along with him, and he's nuts.
Got it. Okay, maybe that was before he was a Scientologist, or if I brand the Scientologist. There you go. So anyway, so there is a difference between the two. Sometimes the line is not as clear as you would like, but some cases I think clearly form one or the other. So the Braisa says that a chereshes a shota and an island is yeshem knas yeshem tanis basulim. So yeshem knas. Well, why not? In other words, if they're basulos, that's what you would expect. Now ilonis we know is a chiddush already, as the Gemara will say in a moment. Now, what about Yeshl and Tainas Basulim? So what is Tainas Basulim? Yaakov?
Someone marries them and then says that they don't have Basulim and it's not about to tell, and then they can lose their Basulim.
Okay, so the din is that and part of what goes along with that, I think, is a crucial point. Yeshl and Tainas Basulim means that there's an expectation that they're a Basulim, and failure to disclose is a failure to inform something that's contrary to expectations, and that carries whatever consequences with it. Now, that may not be the final word. In other words, when you have Tainus Basulim by an Ilonus, for example, if the Ilonus says X, if she has a Taina in response, Mishe Rastani Nenasti, the Mukaseitzani, something that might be a response. But Tainus Basulim is he has a right to come and lodge a Taina that I expected her to be a Basulim, and it turns out based upon the sheet there's no blood on it, or let's just like leave it at that Taina's Damim, he has a right to say, I have been deceived. Now she might have an answer that would win in court, that would sort of push off his Taina, but she needs to provide an answer. She can't say, no, I just wasn't a Basulim and didn't tell you. That's not okay. So the stira is that the Braisa, the first Braisa, Lamed Hamad Bey, said that Ilon is Ein Laknas. And now we have a braisa that says Ilon is Yesh Laknas. So now the Gemara asks, go ahead.
Then.
What kind of what is the word Rumya?
Rumya, what kind of
country? Yeah, sure. What does the word mean? Yeah, in other words, we say Rumi X, Rumya Snisa Raisa presents a contradiction. Hi my Rumya, what's the contradiction here? After all, we know Rameir says an Ilonus has no knas, and presumably the Rabbanon would say an Ilonus yesh no knas, because the Rabbanon believe that a ketana yesh no knas. Rameir says an Ilonus has no knas because an Ilonus goes from being ketana to being a bogeres, never goes through the phase of nara, and for Rameir only a nara gets a knas. But the Chachamim believe that both a nara and a ketana get a knas, and therefore Ilonus yesh no knas. So there's no stira. I mean, it was obvious what the answer is. So now the Gemara says. In other words, what in God's name was the guy in the base manager thinking who asked this question? Is that?
Isn't it the same thing as Rahamayrina?
What do you mean? With the Ka'ari and the Ma'ari?
What's the question? It's obvious.
No. But the Lord's the Ma'ari is what? Well, now the question is, the Gemara's first statement is, there's no contradiction. Now the question is, the person who presented it as a contradiction and didn't realize the obvious resolution, what was he thinking? My Ka'ari, what was going through his mind?
I
agree. It's a little bit flowery language. That's fine. But the point is, the Gemara first says there's no stira, and therefore, what was he thinking?
But Vahamai Ruya has the same idea. He's saying that's not a good question. It's an obvious answer. We don't normally see the Hamai Rumia when we enter a stira, do we?
No, because typically a stira requires an answer.
Stira,
but
so
here, given the discussion that we had already about an Ilonis, the answer is so obvious that no one would think to ask it. That's all.
That's the, my point is, Hamai Rumia and Rudkarila and Makarila are the same.
I understand. In other words, Hamai Rumia says there's no contradiction. There's a contradiction, but the resolution is so obvious, so why did he bother to ask the question?
But they don't appear together always, do they?
No. Hamai Rumia is probably a very fairly rare term. I'd be surprised if it happens anywhere else, in fact. I mean, I'm not saying nowhere in Shas, but it's not a familiar term to me. I know what the words mean when I read it, but it's not someone who could go search. I'd be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the only place you find such an expression. But the Kari and the Maikari, that is not a rare, it's not an extremely rare expression. So the answer is Mishum. He just wanted an excuse to quote the Brisa on the base Medrash. Right, they were learning this first Brisa, but he really had another question. So he quotes this Brisa with a stira of Ilonis, which we know what the answer will be, but now he wants to pose a different question, which is... All right, so let's first look at this. Let's look at this list. We have a Chereshes and a Shota who have no Tainas Basulam. Now, that's sort of one thing. Mukas Eitz, the last one, which should be obvious. Why is it Mukas Eitz have no Tainas Basulam? She doesn't have Basulam. That's the definition of Mukas Eitz, right? They were injured. They in some injury that caused the disintegration or loss of the Basulam. Okay. What about Bogeres? So the Gemara will talk about that. That's sort of in its own right. That seems to be really a mechanical issue. A little bit like Mukas Eitz, but not exactly the same thing. Alex?
A random Mukas Eitz, do people pronounce as Mukas Eitz?
No, but people did used to pay attention to this. There are stories. Apparently, one of the things that can make a woman in Mukas Eitz, I don't know if this is really true. I assume there's a degree of truth in it. Obviously, it means the body being bumped or in a certain fashion was horseback riding. And apparently, I recall hearing somewhere that in Europe, certain rabbanim, when girls would go horseback riding, they would make a note of it. So that later they became an issue, we'd say, well, now we know why. Right? So... So the answer is, presumably, if a woman, one might say the following. Typically, I mean, I think in the case of horseback riding, probably if she did it frequently enough and she lost her psulim, it was probably very gradual. But if it was actually sort of a single blunt force trauma, then it seems that she might have actually seen bleeding. That's what it sounds like from the discussion of the Gemara. And so she, under ordinary circumstances, would be aware that she's likely a mukas eitz.
Right, but I'm saying if the average person has no idea, pick 10 girls off the street who's a Mukas Eitz, who's not, then the only way you know she's a Mukas Eitz is if she told you, so there's no room for the
kind of... Or maybe she did. Here's the story. In other words, when we say Mukas Eitz, it means a woman who already claimed to be Mukas Eitz, yeah.
I guess I just don't understand the case. It's like...
A woman knows she's a Mukas Eitz, she gets married.
She told the guy before he's a Mukas Eitz, and then he goes and...
He can't say, well, I thought there would be X, Y, or Z, right? In other words, if she laid it out that way, at least the reading for the Brisa for now, yeah. In the same standard, Bogeres, again, by a Bogeres, the Gemara is going to say that Bogeres, the way Rashi reads, the Machlokas and Girsa, that has Tainas Damim, but no Tainas Pesach Pasuach, right? That he expects to find blood, but in a case where they didn't look for the blood. Right, but he claims Pesach Pasuach Mansasi. We say Ein Lo Tainis Besulim. Why? Because Rachma's not Tsar anymore, and therefore we don't expect it to be that way. Ah, but he knew she was a Bogeres. The answer is yeah, but he didn't understand the impact of that. That's all.
The point I'm making is just that the Mukas Eitz case is fundamentally different because in other cases he goes to court and she either says, no, I never tricked you, this could happen later, or no, you should have expected. Whereas in this case, it's a completely different argument that they're having. I told you, no, I didn't tell you.
Well, Bogeres, but I'm telling you, Bogeres is the same thing. She doesn't have to tell him. She says, hi, I'm 14 years old. Right? Then he's telling her that, she's telling him that she's a Bogeres with the ramifications. Now he comes and says, Tainas Tainas Pesulim. He's on Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. So the Brisa says it's not a valid Taina. But why? Because we expect it to be Pesach Pasuach. The same way, by Mukas Eitz, we expect there not to be blood. So he's an idiot. Or he's ignorant. That's all. So those two go together.
Isn't Mukas Eitz by definition not having Pesulim? That's what I'm asking.
It is, but the guy doesn't understand, apparently. Because remember, a Mukas Eitz has no physical basulim, or not enough of it, But remember, she is a besula in another way. Rav Meir believes that Mukaseitz Ksubasas Masayan. Right? The question of, you know, does everybody in Yivamas held that Mukaseitz is Asur Lekohen Gadol? What's the din if he married her B'diavad? I don't remember, right? In other words, it could very well be that Mukaseitz for certain purpose. In other words, a Mukaseitz is not a Be'ulas Ish. Rav Meir believes that what men are really concerned about is not whether or not they don't care about the hymen. What they care about is that she's never slept with another man. That's what they care about. So you would have thought the guy comes in, he is tainus because, so we tell him, fool, there's no blood there, not because she had beer with another man, but because there's no blood. That's what happens.
Can it be used as a defense? As in, like, if she didn't claim it before, but then after the talion.
So then the Mishnayos, and we haven't done the Mishnayos in the first parak, but that is one of the defenses, and Rashi is going to raise that issue here, a similar issue, whether we're towing on her, you know, can she be towing? Someone be towing on her behalf. So, since you asked that, let me just make the following comment. The Mishnayos in the first parak have a running machlokas between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer versus Rabbi Yoshua about whether or not the woman has nemanis in a whole variety of cases when he discovers she's not a psula. Is she nemanis to taina that misheres tani nanasti, that I was raped after Averson? Is she nemanis to say mukaseitzani? And fundamentally speaking, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Lezer award her nemanis. Rabbi Yeshua says, lomi pia anuchayin ad shetavi raya lidvareha. Arezo becheska shehit atu ad shetavi raya lidvareha. Rabbi Yoshua says that the assumption is that if she is that she deceived him, unless she can prove that her tain is actually true. So, because that's going to actually, in fact, be what the Gemara is going to try to use here to solve the problem, at least the way Rashi's reading. Okay, so the stira is between Chayreshes and Shota. Now, why would a Chayreshes and Shota? Well, before we get there, a Chayreshes and Shota. Ein lohen tanas besulim. Why not?
Because they might have done something, whatever, or something wrong with them.
Okay, so the assumption is that there's no expectation, Alex, that they be a besula. That might be, on the surface, the way you would read, if you want to read a parallel to the other two. Why? Because apparently the Gemara will say there are lots of girls fall on the ground, but apparently the Gemara does not talk about this, it's talking about a summa. A summa doesn't find out that she broke the basulim. Why? Because she doesn't see the bleeding. All the other girls, the Gemara will say, see the bleeding, and they go run, tell their mothers, and the mothers explain to them that you're not a basula, you're mukaseitz now. But these women don't, because they don't know any better. The Summa's blind, and presumably you'd say the Chereshes and the Shota presumably became a Mukaseitz. But, you know, they don't realize that, so that's why there's no time to Pesulim, because there really should be no expectation.
Right, but there it's a Chazaka, they're not definitionally with that,
I agree that there is a slight difference, but the fundamental premise is there's one. So one, there's one. You know that there's no basulim, or there's no tainus basulim by definition, and the other ones, the Brisa seems to be claiming that there's no tainus basulim because if they're found not to be basulim, you can assume that this was the case.
Right, but I'm just saying that has implications for the fact that the court case of the Mukaseitz is going to play out fundamentally differently than other cases. Because again, the Mukaseitz case, she says, "I said I was a Mukaseitz." That's enough. She said she was a Mukaseitz. She said he should have known. And all he can say is, no, you never told me.
By regular Mukaseitz.
Yeah.
Okay, so here the assumption should be when a man marries a Chereshes and a Shota, the fact that she doesn't tell him that she's a Mukaseitz, but if it turns out there's no Basulim, you can assume she's a Mukaseitz. She just doesn't know any better to say anything. To have told somebody, not the same thing to him. Obviously, other people help arranging the marriage, but she doesn't know, she's not aware that she's a Mukaseitz. Now, how is
she aware that she's a Chereshes, meaning.
Yes, yes. No hiding that. That's
so
pretty hard.
An argument, if you can tell me you're a Chereshes, I didn't have to, and you can see where I am.
Correct. There's no Mekach Tos by Mumin Shibagaloi. Okay. So, how is that a steer to the previous Brisa? That a Chereshes, Vashota, and Ailonis, Yeshlam Kanas.
Yeshlam Kanas.
Ooh. Stepped on a mine there.
That's whether or not you have it.
It seems that came out, all the Rishonim don't have that. Sam. Okay. It seems like I'm abusing the right-hand wall from my vantage point. Okay, you're supposed to know her manuscripts and he's supposed to have Daf Yomi. Okay. So anyway, So a Metzger's never going to talk to me again after this year. All right. So if you have the line of Yeshlam Tainus Pesulam, so the stira is obvious. If you don't, what is the stira? Because most Rishonim don't have that line. They just have Ein Lalo Yeshlam Knas, period. Mati?
If she has Knas, then presume that she's a Pesula. And if she has Pesulam, then you can have a claim.
Correct. As if you say Yeshlam Knas, that implies the Chazakah is that there are Pesulos. And therefore, if she gets married, then on some level, perhaps she has deceived him. Right? There should be... you can't say Inlan Tanis Pesulam. More on that. We'll get that. I want to just leave it at that for now. So now the Gemara says... And now the Brisa continues. Hasuma.
Hasuma, the island is Yeshlam Tanis Pesulam.
So this is a very, very, very odd brisa in the second part. So first, the Tana Kama says, "Assuma einus yeshlam tanis pesulim." Why not? If you hold like the Chacham and Rabbi Meir, great. And why should assuma not have tanis pesulim? Who knows? Presumably, assuma knows if she injured herself. That's going to be the Gemara said was the machlokas action. Then Sumchus comes along and says, "Who was Sumchus?" He was a Talmud of Rabbi Meir. That's the same. Those of you who know the a little bit about Bible, what? You'll tell us the famous sheet in a moment. But there are some of you may know from your intro to Bible that there were three that there was a Greek translation of the Torah known as the Septuagint. But in the first century, it was noticed that it had many variations from the Masoretic text. So there were three different retranslations of the Torah into Greek, and the three translations are known as Aquila, Theodotion, and Symmachus. It's the same name, Sumchus. It's a Greek name. The famous Shita is Mamanamuta Basafi Cholkin. That's many places in Shas. Probably the most extensive one. And I think the origin is the Mishnayos in Baba Kama by Shar Tam and Shamor at the end, probably of the fourth parak, I think, or something like that, towards the end of the fourth parak. Anyway, he was Rabbi Meir's outstanding, one of our Meir's outstanding Talmidim. Gemara Aaron said he was a super genius. He could explain for every din 49 panim latayr and 49 panim latame. Gemara Aaron, I think, Tafiud Gimel Lamed Beis. So Sumchus was a genius. So he quotes Rabbi Meir saying, Suma Inlan Tanis Basum, and the Gemara will explain things later. What is odd about this? Something very odd. I don't think the Rishonim even comment on it. Either I'm missing something or. Suma and Ailan is Yeshlam Knas. Sum Kosam Yeshlam Meir, Suma Inlan Knas. Times Basum,
excuse me. Well, if we just said that Rabbi Meir held. If we resolve the initial stira, which is Rabbi Meir held that an islandist does not have a knas, then why is Rabbi Meir only saying that a summa doesn't get a knas? He's also saying an islandist.
You didn't need that whole introduction. Just say, but you know Rabbi Meir holds an islandist has no knas. We've stayed there very clearly. She doesn't go through Naris. So why does Somchus only quote Rabbi Meir disagreeing on summa? He should have disagreed at islandist as well. I didn't see anybody say anything. Yeah, I've been through the Rishonim here, unless it's on Lamed Vav Lamed Beis. I don't in the Rishonim there. Nobody says anything. Yeah. I think the kasha is so obvious.
What is it? Because she doesn't have a knas. I mean, the Bryce is not talking about a knas. You just think that if the mayor holds, she doesn't.
Oh! Is that? Oh, I'm sorry. I take that back. That was a klutz kasha in my part.
Unless you want to say that.
No, Zach is correct. I was a klutz kasha on my part. Forget it. Scratch it from the record. Right? Rameir doesn't say she's not a psula. It's just that it doesn't matter. She's not a nara ever, so therefore she gets no kas. It only matters in the first prices. So it's just expunge it from the record. There's a reason why the Rishonim didn't ask the question. It was a stupid question. There you go. Fine. All right. You fell for it too. I don't feel so bad anymore. All right. Go ahead. Of course, none of the rest of you figured out what the question was because you all realized why it was a silly question. Right? Okay, go ahead. So now the Gemara has a stira. Amar of Sheshes. Go ahead. Oh, he had to go somewhere. Okay. So, dear. Oh, chavruso misusa. Go ahead. He left because he didn't want to have to explain this. Okay. And this is a very, very, very difficult part. If you don't know anything and you don't have Rashi, you're absolutely, totally clueless. Either that or if you've learned from the beginning of Masechtas here, and so at least you have an inkling as to what's going on. There are a number of different gersos. Most of the Rishonim seem to at least this is one of the possible gersos. What's Rabbi Gamliel and what's Rabbi Yeshua here? What's going on? Man dechar shemeh. So Rashi claims that, and let's assume for the moment, Rashi claims the following. Firstly, Rashi has the girsa Yeshlam Kanas Veyeshlam Tainis Besulim. So the steer is whether it is Tainis Besulim or not. So Rashi says the following. Ein La Tainis Besulim means you have a Chereshes and a Shota who get married. I don't know why Shota is in the Parsha. There's no Kiddushim for Shota, so I don't get that part. Chereshes. Chereshes gets married, the man comes and says, Lo matzasi levitcha besulim. So the Chereshes doesn't really understand and doesn't know enough to advance Tainus. However, we say, on behalf of the Chereshes, we say, as the Gemara will explain in a moment, we tain on her behalf. What if the Chereshes knew enough to taina that Misha Restani Nanasti, that after we had Erisin, I was raped? Now, if the din is that if the facts are that she was raped after Erisin, she's entitled to Raksuba. Absolutely entitled, because the loss that occurred was his loss. We say Nistap Chasadeu. His field was swamped, was overrun with water. Why? Because the Kenyan took place, he acquired her, and everything that happens in subsequent is his loss. So therefore, Ein lo tainas besulim. But she's not. In other words, if she stepped forward and she tained Misha Restani Nanasti, we would believe her. Now that she doesn't know how to taina, the Gemara will say, Kigonzo, we say, Psach Picha Le'ilem. The weak and the infirm and those who can't help fend for themselves, we have an obligation to fend for them. It's one of the core principles, moral principles of Torah. The concern of din yasom and almana and so on. So here it's psach pi chalilem. She doesn't know how to taina. We say on her behalf, maybe misharasta mishinisarsa nensa. What is Rabbi Yeshua's position? He doesn't believe in psach pi chalilem? No. Of course he believes in psach pi chalilem, but what is she tainted here? According to Rabbi Yeshua, misharasta ninanasti, what would the din be? Doesn't matter. She has to prove it. Achetavi raya alreza becheska sheit atu achetavi raya ledvarah. So basically, the brisa that says yeshlam tainis besul in the first brisa is Rabbi Yeshua. The second brisa is Rabbi Gamliel. Let's read Rashi inside. Harabban Gamliel. First Harabban Gamliel. Gadir. The Omar.
Actually, I don't have the Rashi.
Yadin. You can read it, Yadin.
Oh, I can read it. Wow.
Yes. Had she tied it, she would be believed, and as the Gemara will say later, we tied on her behalf. Ha Rabbi Yeshua. Yeah, even if she were to advance a Tainas Bari, we still wouldn't believe her. We'd still say that the burden of proof is upon her. So therefore, based upon Tanina and based upon Psach Picha Le'ilem, it doesn't change anything. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Amar. Yeah. In other words, very nice, but she didn't say that. So the Gemara's answer is. Right. This is as the din of psach picha lele. Right. This case, since she would be believed with her taina, we taina on her behalf.
Okay.
This is a melita. It's not nothing to do with cheresh. It's nothing to the fact that the cheresh can't talk. It's not, in other words, Elaim is a totally different. Elaim is a bardas. Just the Gemara says, Puma hu dekoivle. Gemara Yevamos. That you should have gotten to already. Puma hu dekoivle. His mouth hurts him. Yeah, Jacob?
How does Rabbi Yeshua expect her to prove it? She can't even, like, speak in the first place. How is he going to expect her to bring the claim?
Well, look, maybe, you know, so how is she going to prove it? Maybe Aiden will step forward that they witnessed the rape. Maybe all of a sudden the mother will say, oh, yeah, she took a very nasty fall in a certain circumstance and there was bleeding and I forgot to mention or something. You never know. She, typically speaking, on Shetavi Raya Devara means she loses. She's not going to bring up a proof. If she had a proof, she would have brought it already. But it's in Rabbi Yeshua's statement as a matter of principle, she loses until she brings proof. That's all. Okay, fine. Now, there are two problems conceptually, or not conceptually, but two problems from a larger halachic perspective with this particular issue. Number one, these are the questions of Tosis. We're going to spend a little bit of time reading the sugya, pieces of the sugya daf ayin hei. I want you to see it because it's a really, really important sugya and it's relevant to fully understanding Tosis. We have a general rule that if you want to be motzi mamon from someone, you have to prove it. Hamotzi mechaver al harayit. It's sort of the cardinal principle of dine mamonos. Of course, you have to determine what's called being motzi. So, for example, when you deal with ksuba, when someone wants to collect a ksuba, who is the motzi? Is it the woman who's being motzi, or is it the man who's being motzi? So you would have said on your in other words, the man by not paying, is he being motzi, or is the woman being motzi by collecting it? So you would have said on your own, as a dabar pashut, the woman is being motzi. So it may be, the Gemara in Sota suggests there may be a machlokas be shamay be silil here, whether shtar ha'omei legavos kegavoy dami, or ligvos kegavoy dami. If is the ksuba already beches kasa isha? Suffice it to say that Beis Hillel says no. It's not. Okay.
What does Beis Hillel say?
Beis Hillel says it's that it's the Isha's the Motzi. On the bottom of Chafeh Amid Aleph. So Machlokas, what happens if the husband dies after Kinu Vistira, but she hasn't drunk the water, the Mesota yet? So she can't drink the Mesota because she needs the husband alive. So Mesu Balenat Shloshasu, Beishamai says that Notlos Subasa Veloshosos, and Beisil says Oshosos Olo Notlos Subasan, which really means Lo Notlos Subasan, as the Gemara says. So the Gemara suggests, the Machlokas is who's the burden of proof fall upon at this point? Does it fall upon her to collect or the Yorshim to prove that she can't collect? Mati?
What do we say about a Mashkon and a other one? We say
that the person who has the Mashkon is the Machzik. In other words, if you owe money and you give a Mashkon and now you're debating the debt, the whole point of taking the mashkon is so that you're not the motzi anymore. Now the burden of proof falls. I mean, also it gives you, means a collection guaranteed, but it means, I'm pretty sure it means that the burden of proof now falls upon the other person. I could be wrong, but
so
I thought
so. Isn't the ksuba, doesn't it often put a shibud on the
land? Correct, but that's not a mashkon.
So is that
about shibud also? Right, no. So that appears to be the machlokas beishamai beisil. In effect, how do you treat the shibud of a shtar? Kagavli dami or not. That's what it seems to be. And with the primary nafkamina, who does the burden of proof fall upon? Is there a question from there? No? Okay. So that is Chinish. So the rules are Motze Mechav Haraya. The ability in this particular case to collect without a taina is pretty astounding. That is to say that in this case, the chereshes, who is not even toenes, collects her ksuba, and the husband, in order not to pay her, would have to prove that she committed adultery. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that she's not even saying that Misha is not nasty. She's not saying anything. So it's not even like you have a bari here. You know, there's a whole question whether bari v'shema, bari adif, lahotzi mamon. It's a big question. Let's say, Zashayla, whether my ox, in certain cases, gored your ox, or which of my oxen gored your ox, and what are the liabilities with that? So, what's the din? In other words, let's say my shore chased your shore, two of my shvarim chased your shore. A shore tam and a shore mua chased your shore. Which is it better for me to have gored your shore? The shore tam, because I only pay chatzi nesek, I only pay migufo. So what if you, Taina, what if you say it was, you know, your shore mua that gored my ox, and I say, I don't know. So there, Sumchus would say, but we say no. We say that that the Baal the Nizak has to prove, if I don't know, the Nizak has to prove that it was my Sharmua that gored his ox. Why? Because Bari Vishema is not Odith. Bari is not Odith. Lahutzi Cheskas Maman. If one party is certain, one party is uncertain, but the party who's uncertain has the Chazaka, the Bari is not strong enough, at least there, to be Motzi Mecheskas Maman. The famous Shailan, the Gemara of this is. The original case with the Machlokas Amaraim is the following. Mana libiyatcha. And you say, Eini yodea. You owe me $100. You borrowed. I said, I recall, I have no idea. So what's the din? It's Machlokas Amaraim. So I think we paskin that Bari Vishema Bari is not on the float to Cheskas Maman. Mana libiyatcha v'Allah omei ni yodea is pata.
That's not kofar bako.
I'm sorry?
It's not
the same thing. He's not a kofar bako. Kofar bako says, I don't owe you anything. Here he says, I have no idea. I don't remember. If he says, I borrowed money, I don't remember if I paid it back, then he has to pay. Everybody agrees. But if he says, I don't remember if I borrowed the money from you, I just don't have any recollection. I'm not denying that, or I'm not saying, I absolutely did not borrow, I don't remember. I can't remember what, you know, I have a blank spot in my memory for the month of July. So we paskin that Bari Vishema, Bari is not Adif. So in this case, it's not clear it's a Bari Vishema, but certainly she's no more than a Shema. So those are the questions that are going to bother Tosis a little bit, but he's going to deal with. He's going to point out how many they may not matter. In order to understand how they may not matter, we have to first take a look at a very important sugya later in the Masechta. And we're going to do excerpts of the sugya. I don't want to do every detail. It's not an easy sugya. It starts with the bottom Mishnah on the bottom of Naf Ayin Hamed Aleph. Dear, you get to read the Mishnah, and then someone else will take over. Because Zach is itching to read. Maki told me so.
Yuba Mumin, Voda Bedavia, Abzarek Laviraya, Shemishanit Arsa, Hayubo Mumin Halalu.
Okay, so if they're coming to make the chuppah and then he discovers that she has mumin that are hidden. In other words, they're underneath her clothing, on things that normally he would not have seen at this point. It gets found out somehow. A female relative is in the bathhouse, saw her, and revealed it.
Is this before
Bia? Before Nisuin, before Bia. So the father, who wants to collect this ksuba, her ksuba, because it goes to him, he has to prove that the mumin only occurred after Erusin. And at that point, nistab chasadei. However, nichnasa... Go ahead.
Nichnasa l'shut habal, habal tzarif l'aviraya, sh'ad sh'loni v'asa hayuba mumin elu,
okay, so everybody in principle agrees to this. The rest are details of what he likely would have known, what he wouldn't have known, Mumin should say someone should call it. The bottom line is that if the discovery of the Mumin takes place when she's in Arusa, the father has to prove that the Mumin happened after Erusin. If the husband discovers the Mumin after Nisuin, he has to prove that the Mumin were there before Erusin and that she deceived him. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, do these two positions fit together? Truth be told, on the surface, these positions make absolutely no sense. They're contradictory. What is the crucial dividing line, Zach, between where before and after for the Mumin? No. Erusin.
Erusin. So I'm saying
that after. No, in the Mishnah, the distinct line is assumed, but Minasvara, all that matters is whether or not the Mumin were there before Erusin or after Erusin. So if that's the case, when do we discover the Mumin even in the first case in the Mishnah? After the Erusin. So, in other words, in both cases of the Mishnah, we discover the Mumin after the Erusin. What difference should it make whether there was Nisuin or not?
What about Nisuin? It's about where it happened.
Agreed, but what I'm saying is, when does it matter? What's the dividing line for when it matters, actually, in reality? Erusin. If you discover the Mumin after Erusin, either the burden of proof is now upon the husband because they've had Erusin, it's his kinyan, or despite the fact that it's discovered after Erusin, still, since these women could very well have been there before and he wouldn't have known about it because they're beseser, so she or her family has to prove it. What difference should Nisuin make fundamentally between the burden of proof? What?
Who's being
no. The husband either way is mochsuk on the ksuba.
Is there like a final check before Nisuin?
That's a different question. So that's one could have argued. What, it's going to come up with Derech Agav in the Gemara that before maybe he does Nisuin, he's Bodka Bekrovo Seha. That's what the Mishnah says, actually, in the last part. It says that if it was a Merchat Shebe'ir, Af Mumin Shebe'sei Se'inu Yachol Letam. But let's assume that is no Merchat Shebe'ir. Right? They didn't do, this is, she's not a piece of cattle that they do an inspection. It's not Kavod Abrios. It's not Kavod Abrios.
The question is in whose rishus the moon could have been nolad. So if you find it in the Baal's rishus,
so now you're throwing me an answer, the Gemara, but that answer is a teretz. It's not when you read the Mishnah, the Gemara is bothered for a good reason, enough that one Amora said that
the Gemara is only bothered because they can't figure out who she can put it in.
Yeah, because that means it's a contradiction. The whole point is that if she's had Erusin already, whether the Mumin happened after Erusin or after Nisuin is totally irrelevant. All that matters is they happened before or after Erusin. If you're going to argue that the time of the discovery of the Mumin is what's relevant, then presumably when you discover it after Erusin, the burden of proof is upon the husband. Obviously, if it's discovered before Erusin, then she has to prove that he was Melchal, that he knew. Right? But once you say, in other words, but there's no reason that there should be a distinction, at least on the surface, between before and after Nisuin. Because, in other words, when you discover Mumin after the point of Erusin, you either say now that even though it's discovered now, she has to prove that they weren't there before, or you say since it's discovered now, in a time period in which if it happened now, it would be his loss, he has to prove that it happened earlier. But when you frame it that way, it doesn't really matter whether it's before or after Nisuin. Because if it happens either before or after Nisuin, but after Erusin, bottom line is, it's his loss. So why should I care when you discover it before or after Nisuin? As long as you discover it after Erusin, you know, as long as that's the time you can pinpoint it, that should be sufficient. Either, and at that point, we either say the burden of proof is always upon her, or we say no. Once she's nichnas al reshuso, the burden of proof is upon him. Alex.
We can maybe say that Nisuin is a fundamental change of status, and in both cases, it's the party that wants to change that status that has the burden of proof on that meeting.
Nisuin is a fundamental change in status? Erusin is not. Firstly.
I said Nisuin is a fundamental change.
I know, but Erusin, as opposed to Erusin?
Well, Nisuin is the consummation. There's a bia there.
So let me make an observation to you, young man. if you're looking for a nafka mina deraisa between a penuyu and arusa, it's pretty darn easy to find it. When you're looking for a nafka mina between arusa and nesua, you have to work a little hard. Not that hard, but a little hard. In fact, there might only be one mina Torah.
Truma?
No. Mina Torah clear. Truma erusin is macha, but truma mina Torah. It's only because of chashash and mumin that mumin or feed her household, but mina raisa absolutely arusa is machila betruma.
What about a mitzvah's difference in the stigma that attaches to a person after
the nafka mina deraisa?
What's the nafka mina deraisa? You tell me, yeah. See, one thing you could say to me would be Yerusha, except that there are Tanaim, Amoraim, and Rishonim who hold that Yerusha Sabal is the Rabbanon. It's Machlokas. You could say to me, a Kohen being Metame. However, the Rambam holds that it's Mitin Meis Mitzvah, so it's not really an afkamina between Arusa, Erisin versus Nisuin. It's a din of when, in reality, are they living together that no one else is going to bury her, so she becomes Asa'u Kameis Mitzvah. So even that, while it's a din Daraisa, an afkamina din Daraisa, it may not clear that it's a function purely of the Nisuin. Okay? So what is the nafkamina?
What do you consider divorced? If something is a... You need to get...
Either way, after Arusin, you need to get. The point is, Arusa makes sure an Eishish is that Bahabola Bechenek, or Skila, whatever it is. Arusin's the big one. Nisuin, you're busy scratching. What does Nisuin change her status? Alex.
According to those who say that Ashala Marasa means she's not engaged currently, so the Nafka means whether she gets a class or not. Because some would say once she's engaged, that she's never getting a class. But according to the other opinion, if we undo the engagement, so she's back in the pressure of getting a class, Masha Akin, once she had Via, so then she's never going to get a class again.
Okay, but that's not a halachic change. That's because she's not a besula in Matthias.
Okay, so first of all, I don't understand why it has to be.
Without the chiddush of the Rashba, without the chiddush of the Rashba, if there's edim that she nichlas alachupa, but there are edim that they had no yichud. Putting aside the Rashba we learned yesterday, take the Ramban's approach. She's a besula. Okay, and in that case. In that case, what did you say? You said for knas. There should be a knas. There would be a knas according to the Rambam. Yeah, if you know she's a psula. Assuming you don't hold like the shita shel orasa, right? Rabbi Yosef Galili. What's the nafka mina, guys, between Arisin and Nisuin midaraisa? Zach.
No, father doesn't have
Nidon
after.
Yes, but why do you say Masayda? You're correct. The first Nidon is the answer.
Father doesn't get Masayda. Her husband gets Masayda. Isn't it Machlok as well as Masayda?
Thank you. No, not really. The real one, you could have tied it to me, Nafkamina would have been Sherkhsus Faona. If you want to tie that, you could have said that might be true. I don't know that. I don't ever seen that or discussed. He could do it, Shalom L'Shem Nisuin. Maybe. Okay. There's certainly, obviously, no obligation of Ona. But I would even argue there, I would argue it's not a function of the change in status as much as the function of she's living with him. In the same way that the Rambam's din, the Rambam's notion that Kohen is Metame to his wife, meet Asa'ur Kameis Mitzvah, is that it now is incumbent upon him, you could say the same thing. In other words, to the extent that Nisuin means they're living together, it's incumbent upon him as a Metzias. Whereas Hafaras Nadarim is a din. It's a Gzeris HaKosov. When she's in Arusa, her husband and father split the duties if she's in Ara. One, if she's a Bulgaris, I don't think anybody can do anything until she's in a Sua.
Hafaras Nadarim, right?
Yeah.
Bulgaris, her husband, and Arusin can't?
No, I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Why not?
Because she's not Babes Bala. That's the point.
But that obviously doesn't matter.
The Bulgaris is not Babes Bala. It's only.
That's true. But I don't.
That makes sense. Why her father can't make for her Nadarim, that makes sense. Why not her Ba?
You have to figure out why. Baal can't be made for the Nadar. Pretty sure. So anyway, coming back to whoever was coming up with this crazy idea, okay, the bottom line is Arusin. Oh, you don't have to volunteer, and it's okay. The bottom line is that Arusin really is a big deal. Nisuin, you got to scratch a little bit for nafka mina. In Metzias, Nisuin really is a change in lifestyle. But in Din, but again, but the point for our purposes, the question is, when did the mumen happen? You either say that the woman has to prove the mumen weren't there earlier because she wants to be motzi mamon of the ksuba, and then it shouldn't matter when you discover the mumen. And as if we can reasonably believe that he didn't know until this moment, that if the burden of proof is upon her, the burden of proof is upon her. If you want to say that from the time that when we discover the mumen, that's when we assume that they happen, right? The chazaka would be, we're dealing with mumen that she wasn't born with, right? If the woman is missing a leg, okay, then presumably you don't have to have a fight about whether or not when the mumen happened, right? Well, if she's missing a leg that wasn't cut off, but congenitally so, right? You know it was from birth. We're obviously talking about mumen that could have happened at any time. So, if you're going to say that the burden of, that once you know she's nichnasa l'rishuso for when she has kiddushin, what if you're going to say at this point we assume when you discover it now we assume it happened now, then it doesn't matter whether they discovered after erisin or nisuin. If it happened after erisin or after nisuin, either way it's the baal's loss. So that's why the Gemara doesn't understand the split between these two. What difference does it make when they discover the mumen? What matters is when the mumen happened. That's what matters. The only thing you could say is that the Baal comes 2 years after they got married and says, I discovered these mumen, so we might say, we don't believe you. You would have known it by now. You've been living with her. You've been sleeping with her. You presumably know everything, almost everything about her body. You can't tell me you didn't know. You knew. You knew a year ago, a year into the marriage, and you were mochel, but now you want a time to get out of this marriage because you don't like her anymore. But short of that, you either say that when the mumen are discovered, that's when we assume they happen, and the burden of proof is upon whichever party to prove that's not when it happened, in this case usually the Baal, or you say that as soon as the mumen are discovered, and they could have been there before Erisin, she has to prove that they weren't there before Erisin, she or her father. That's what the Gemara is bothered by. The bottom line is, when something happens that could cause a woman to forfeit her ksuba, some kind of a potential mekach taos, do you believe the woman or not? When the woman presumably knows for sure, and the husband doesn't really know, right? All the cases in the Mishnayos in the first parak, the husband says, "You're not a psula, you cheated on me." He doesn't know she cheated on him. All she knows is that he's not a psula, is that she's not a psula. That's all he knows. That he can assert betainus bari. But how it happened, he doesn't know. She can assert b'tainas bari that, yeah, I'm not a psula, but misher estani nanas, or mukas eitzani, and so on and so forth. So the Gemara says, go ahead, Taima, on Ayin and Beis, skip to the first beginning of the Gemara, Taima.
Taima d'maitia av raya, halo maitia av raya,
right. If the father of the girl can prove that these mumen happened et lahar erisin, she doesn't collect the ksuba. Who shitas? Rabbi Yeshua, who says that she's not in a menace. That her tainus bari against his tainus shema doesn't override the cheskas mamon of the ksuba, and the husband is muhsak on the ksuba. So ema seifa. Right, unless the husband can prove that the mumen were there from before the marriage, before the Averson, so he has to pay. So you see the father would be Naaman, the girl would be Naaman also, presumably. Asan, the Rabban Gamliel. So what's the Sotah Stira? Is it Rabban Gamliel? Is it Rabbi Yeshua? So, Amar, probably Rabba.
Amar Rabba, lo tema Rabbi Yeshua, lo azil batar chazaka de
kufa. Oh, I'm sorry. No, you skipped the line. I misled you, I'm sorry. My eyes skipped down. Amar Rabbi Lazar, yes.
Amar Lazar, tibara, misha shanazu, lo shanazu.
Yeah, I don't, the Rishonim talk about what the word tavra means. That's what I always thought it meant. Now Rashi says Tavra Kasha Resha Lasefa, which could mean Tavra means it's a breaking Akasha that breaks things, meaning there's no way to put it together, and therefore you have to say Mishashana Zaloshana Zo. It's really source critical answer, it's two different authors. It's a stira in the Mishnah because it's two different opinions. If you look at Tosos, this is the first time I noticed it just preparing this Gemara a week ago. Tavra Peirush Rabbeinu Chanan al Shvua. I always thought it was so obvious what Tavra meant. I didn't check. I noticed there's a note to the Aruch, I think. Was there a note? So I always thought it was Pasha. I think it means break it up. It could be a Kusha Shoveres also. I don't know why you have to say that.
I think there's like in the
recover, the akivas is tavra, is stick or something?
No, the word tavra means to break normally, absolutely.
But it was like in the same context of like
Yes, I don't understand. I don't know why you can't just read this as break it up. Okay, but anyway, now you can skip to Rabba Omar. It's the beginning of a line. You have to skip about 5 or 6 lines. It could be Rabba Rav. I'm not sure. No, it's Rabba, because it's Abaye asked the kasha on him.
Rabba Amaresha? Yes. Rabba Amaresha,
kan yitzu
v'kan hayu. Sefanami, kan yitzu v'kan hayu.
Okay. So I'm going to take the luxury of skipping the Shach of Atarya. We have 2 minutes now till we daven mincha. I just want to explain briefly. This is a very shocking idea. Kan nimtzu kan hayu doesn't mean what you think it means. What do you think kan nimtzu kan hayu means, Zach, since you were volunteering this?
It means that since this is where we found it, we can assume this is where it was born.
Okay, and so what? So what? So when you say here, this is where. What are you referring to?
Now that you're in the rishis, let's say she's still in the rishis of her father. So then we can assume that it was. Well, that would make more sense because obviously she's been in the rishis of her father up until now. But
so here's the tricky part, which took me a while to wrap my mind around this. I would have said kan nimzu kan hayu should have been a chronological thing, that discovery indicates the time it happened. But that won't work here. As if it's the point I was making earlier. Discovery time here is after Averson he loses. So apparently, no, it means if you discover it when she is legally Birshus Ha'av, then we say that it happened Birshus Ha'av, and that means more than just happened Birshus Ha'av. It accrues to the liability of the father. Because remember, when she's in Arusa, she's Birshus Ha'av. What happens if the woman come when she's in Arusa? What's the din? He loses. So in other words, we're not saying that the woman happened when she was Birshus Ha'av, but rather the woman happened Birshus Ha'av. Since she is currently located there and we discover it now, we assume almost that the first moment she was Birshus Ha'av, that's how it's treated. Okay, that's what Rava says. You get a little time tonight to chew over it. There is a, let's read very quickly the third teretz, and I involve him at Aleph. Ravashi Amar, it's the sixth line, last word on the line. And this is giving you a lot to chew on tonight. Adir?
Ravashi Amar, Resha Mana Abba Yadach, Visefa Mana Li
Biadech. Biadcha. In other words, what's the difference between the Resha and the Seifa? The Resha, the father, is trying to collect the Ksupa. The Seifa, the daughter, is trying to collect the Ksupa. Does that make any sense to you?
We do give ksuba after if he gives a debt after Avison, don't we?
What's that?
There's a ksuba after Avison.
Well, he had Nisuan already. All of this takes place correct. Correct, no. So the answer is he wrote a ksuba min Avison. You don't have to write a ksuba min Avison. What?
Then it's voluntary.
Only Tosefes ksuba. You know, you're not mechuyev to write a ksuba min Avison. You only have to write a ksuba.
If you didn't write anything,
and you divorce him in Arison, there's no ksuba. If you write correct. If you write a ksuba and you have a tosefes, everybody agrees the mana masayim is collectible. The tosefes is machlokas for blazim and zayin. The chachamim, the first mission, the fifth parak. So the question is, whatever the levels of evidence are, if they are strong enough for her to collect the ksuba, why aren't they strong enough for the father to collect the ksuba? Are you suggesting that he doesn't know, but she does?
Yeah, I'm reading with Tosos. But
that's not what Tosos says. That's Tosos Kasha. That's what most of the Rishonim say. Rashi says something unbelievable here. Rashi says that the Chazaka Cheskas Gufa that she has of not having Mumin at the beginning, because that's really why the girl wins normally. She has a Cheskas Gufa being a Psula, a Cheskas Gufa of not having Mumin, and when we discover she's not a Psula, or he discovers she's not a Psula, he discovers she has Mumin, we assume that it happened at the last possible point. It's the Chazaka of status quo. The Cheskas Gufa. Rashi says the Cheskas Gufa of the girl works for her to collect, not for the father to collect.
Right.
What in God's name does that mean? By the way, lest you, I read this Rashi. Tosus defends Rashi, and Tosus in the beginning of the Masechta, and he says it here, and Lamed Vav says it here again. And I read this, I said, I have no idea what this is talking about, and I figured I'm missing some great lumdus, which I am. But then you discover the Ramban and the Rashban, and you all say, there's no possible way there could be a distinction that the Cheskas Gufa should work for her and not work for the father. They say Bari Vishema. Tosus rejects that after raising as a Havamin and Lamed Vav. Tosus says not so. That's the beginning of this Tosus, but he says it's wrong. Based upon just the reading of the Gemara. It's a pella. What is Rashi and what are Rashi and Tosfos talking about? The Cheskas HaGuf works for her, but not for the father? Even when he's a Bari? Ram could not wrap his mind around that, neither could his Talmidim. I can't either, but I don't know anywhere near as much as the Ramban or Tosfos did, or Rashi, for that matter. So, anyway, we'll have a chance, hopefully, to talk about this a little bit, beginning, I hope to have Shir tomorrow, technology permitting. So we'll stop.